everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown! You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right. Another week, another huge win up in Foxborough as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 37. At the top of this week's show, as always, we've got Chalk Talk, where Greg Cosell and I recap Sunday's huge win against the Patriots and transition to the Buffalo Bills on both sides of the ball. After that, we've got Two Technique with Eagles running back Kenyon Barner. He had a big week this past week for the Eagles. Other than that fumble late in the game, was really an impact player on this offense. I talked to him about the art of the screen pass as a running back. And then we'll close the show out with Saturday scouting. The college football playoff has been announced. We've got a lot of bowl games, things that we'll be able to discuss over the next few weeks. But the All-Star game trips are booked. We've got a lot to talk about with my favorite man in the room, Brian Thomas. BT, what's up, man?
What's up, sir? How are you?
Doing wonderful. Both of us were obviously up in Foxborough, so we don't really have to rehash what each other did over the weekend. But
we moved to 1-1 as a travel team.
That's
now.
True.
So we were 0-1 with Buffalo, and now we get back up in the, like, I don't know, Buffalo's obviously not New England, but the AFC East, we finally get a victory. And it was tough, but it was a huge victory to go up there and get a win.
Absolutely. And it actually occurred to me yesterday on Monday as I was doing my Eagle Eye in the Sky column. I was breaking down the Darren Sproles punt return for a touchdown. It was his last one since week 3. I was also in attendance for that game. So maybe if the Eagles
if Fran travels, Sproles will return a punt.
Yeah, what I'm kind of thinking is that, you know, because obviously I'm over here on game days for at Novacare Complex for home games. If it's like a tight game late in the game, I might just have to walk across the street and just go over and, you know, just hope that they punt it.
So you were at the Jets game. That was Pope weekend, obviously.
Yes.
So you've basically been to 3 of the 4 AFC's teams.
Correct. Yes.
So we just need to get you to Miami and you're good.
Hey, and I'm all for
it. I'm sure you'll sign up for that.
I'm all for it. So in a few years, we'll talk about it. But obviously, we have a lot to get to in today's show. Let's get this party started, though, with the man of the hour. The man that everybody has come here to listen to, Greg Cosell from NFL Films. It's that time of the show. Let's get the Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Joining me once again here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, NFL Films senior producer Greg Cosell. And Greg, another week. It's week 14 here. The season is winding down here in 2015, which is crazy to say considering where it feels like we're at. I mean, it's unbelievable how you get to this point in the season. It's a grind, but it almost doesn't feel like you can't believe that it's gone this fast already.
Yeah, it's an interesting combination, Fran, because you're right. You just do the same ritual every week. You know, it's like Groundhog Day. You just do the same thing every week. All of a sudden, it's week 14.
Yeah, exactly right. So,
but hey, we have a win.
Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about. It's a big win. I was very excited to be up there in New England for the game. A huge win, and you had contributions in all three phases of the game. Let's start on the offense. I know you got a chance to go through
it. I did.
What did you think overall of Sam Bradford and his performance? Obviously, coming off the injury, he missed a couple weeks. What did you think of Sam on Sunday?
Uneven. Didn't throw the ball a whole lot. They didn't run that many plays.
Yeah.
Obviously, I think they only gained about 250 yards of offense. It was a little uneven, but he made a couple of really good throws. I think the real critical throw in the game when the score was 14-0 was the 3rd and 10 throw to Jordan Matthews.
The one for 20 yards.
The one for 20 yards.
Yeah, it was a great
one. And he was under duress, and he had to throw that ball really early, so it had to be thrown with great anticipation and precise accuracy, and it was. And as you and I think, had probably discussed last week, when you play New England, you have to be able to win against man coverage. And when you say win against man, it's not just the receiver. The quarterback has to be able to make tight throws at the right time. And that play, to me, really got their offense going to some degree, because that was the drive that ended with a really nice touchdown to Zach Ertz as well, and he beat man coverage. He beat Devin McCourty with a really, really nice stick-nod-go route. But I think the Matthews play stood out to me. But overall, the offense, they ran the ball with some sustainability, not a lot of big runs, but sustainability.
Sure.
That was the best part of the offense to me.
Sure. So two things. One, it was pretty clear that the focus was on the perimeter run game, trying to get things going outside the numbers. You know, you saw a lot of Kenyon Barner, a lot of Darren Sproles, not as much DeMarco Murray, as everybody has been talking about this week. But go back to those two plays, the Jordan Matthews play and the Zach Ertz play. I thought one of the things that I took away from that drive was that those two plays, they weren't necessarily concepts that we see the Eagles run. You know, and we say this all the time, that it's an execution offense.
Right.
They run the very, you know, all the same schemes. You know, that Jordan Matthews play, we didn't see that concept.
Funny you say that. I don't really recall seeing Matthews run a whole lot of, I mean, it was almost like a corner route or outbreaking route, whatever, you know. Again, he may have cut it short because he did get tied up with Patrick Chung. So he had to get to a spot because, as a receiver, you know, you only have so much time to be where you need to be. But, yeah, that was a good play. I remember the play a little bit in terms of that was almost a bit of a three-level stretch.
It was a bit
concept.
Of a three-level stretch.
Yes.
And it was interesting because I going through the play, I remember looking at it and thinking, okay, would I call this a three-level stretch or would I call it a stick route? Because you had the vertical. It was a bunch set, a three-by-one set. Zach Ertz was the point man in the
bunch.
Which
I really liked, by the way, because you're playing a team that plays a high percentage man-to-man defense. And the bunch is a really good concept to attack that.
No question. So at the snap, Zach Ertz kind of stepped back, you know, delayed his release off the line of scrimmage. Jordan Matthews released inside to only try and break outside. And Nelson Aguilar ran a vertical route, kind of a clear out route, trying to work. You're trying to get those two routes underneath the Zach Ertz and Jordan Matthews routes open. But it was just interesting to see that concept, which we haven't really seen from the Eagles. And then the stick not go, I mean, When was the last time we've seen that?
Again, not a true bunch, but two receivers basically almost in a stack.
Sure.
And Ertz just did a really, really good job of winning on that route. And, you know, obviously not a difficult throw, but you still have to make the throw. But offensively, you know, the way the game played out, it was certainly enough. And of course, he did make the big throw to Riley Cooper for 14 yards under major duress.
That's a big-time throw. Yep.
At the end of the game. But other than that, like I said, the run game had some elements of sustainability, but 250 yards of offense on a week-to-week basis will not be enough.
Sure. And then that's the thing is that I know Sam Bradford talked about it after the game. It was great to have the win. It was a great team win. But you can't count on three defense and special teams touchdowns week to week so that the offense wouldn't have to look at the tape and see what they can build off of as they prepare for the Buffalo Bills. Defensively, a lot of different standout players. Who was it that stood out to you the most?
I think you're dealing with Fletcher Cox, who I think was a really disruptive player. Malcolm Jenkins was really, really disruptive. The play that really, I think, started things off, and it was a play where the Eagles didn't even get their personnel on the field right away, was the sack by Connor Barwin.
Yeah.
I think it was a second down sack, and it was a beautifully executed stunt. And to me, the thing that made that play work was not just the stunt part, but stunts are so much tied into the defensive front alignment. And
sure. They
had Fletcher Cox lined up, head up on the offensive center.
See, I think Bill Davis does such a great job with things like that.
I agree with you.
This was really well done.
And the reason that was so important is because when you want Barwin to loop behind Graham on the TE stunt, you don't want the center to be in a position to help out and defeat the whole purpose of the stunt, which is to get Barwin in clean. So they had Cox line head up on the center. He occupies him, eats him up, and then when Barwin loops behind Graham, he's clean to the quarterback. And I thought that sort of set the tone. And the reality is, we know the Patriots are a great team, but over the last number of weeks, they've had some concerns with their O-line. Brady's probably been hit more over the last 3 weeks now, including the Eagles game, than he may have been in the previous, nine games combined. And that was an area that the Eagles needed to exploit. And it's not necessarily always a function of sacks, as we know, but you just want to get Brady off his spot, playing a little faster, feeling like that his tempo is moving more than he'd like it to.
Yeah, sure. You get that clock moving a little bit faster than the quarterback's comfortable with.
Yep.
It's always going to be good for the defense. And I thought, like you said, that Fletcher Cox was so disruptive throughout the entire game. Not necessarily, didn't show up in the sacks, didn't show up with a lot of TFLs, but was consistently moving Brady off of his spot in the passing game. Was disruptive once again in the run game as well. But and then on the back end, I thought Malcolm Jenkins had an outstanding game. And it was funny. He made so many headlines a week ago talking the talk. Talked about some of the things that needed to be done. And then he goes out and he walks the walk on Sunday against the Patriots. Makes plays in the run game. Right before the pick six, he made that huge stop on first and goal, a four-yard TFL down the goal line.
I remember, yes, very big
to help
play.
Set it up. And they were in nickel against a goal line sub package. I mean, they were kind of misaligned there, and he was able to knife through between the tackle and the tight end and make the TFL. So very good game again for Malcolm Jenkins.
Yeah, and I think he's, in many ways, the glue that holds the secondary together.
Sure.
He's a pretty consistent player on a week-to-week basis. You know, it's funny, when you win – and you beat a really good team. And let's face it, I'm sure many people were surprised, number one, that the Eagles won, and secondly, surprised at how they did it. But you also need things to happen that you don't normally expect to happen. I mean, you talked about that interception return, which, you know, Brady threw the ball to a double-covered receiver.
Right.
As you know, when you look at the tape, the Eagles double-covered Brandon LaFell on the right side of the formation and Danny Amendola in the slot to the left side of the formation, and Brady threw it to one of the double-covered receivers. Now, when you watch the tape closely, you can kind of understand why maybe he thought he had Amendola, because it looked like he was clearing the double coverage, but still, he chose a receiver who was double-covered, and normally Tom Brady won't do that.
Yeah, I thought that overall, Bill Davis did a really good job of mixing up the coverage concepts, and then in turn, I thought that the coverage really helped the pressure up front. And you know, Bill Davis always talks about that really almost on a weekly basis, how much those two phases of the defense are connected, the rush and the coverage, and how they are willing to, or they are able to really help each other in certain areas of the game.
Well, you know, a lot of coaches take the approach that you have to add a second to either one. In other words, if you can take a second off the pass rush and get there a second quicker, that's great. If you can add a second in coverage,
sure. Yeah.
Then that helps your pass rush.
Right.
So, you know, that second is the way a lot of coaches talk about that.
Yeah. He always says it, like I said, but it was just interesting. I thought this game, more so than some we've seen in recent past, where you could really see that in a lot of different instances.
Yep.
So now let's look ahead to Buffalo. And obviously, Chip Kelly's never been one to say that a team can build off of momentum, and because you know everyone thought after the Dallas game, the win in overtime, that you know the Eagles were going to go on a roll, and obviously that did not happen. It was actually the complete opposite. It was a 3-game losing streak. A good overall, when you look at this Buffalo team in terms of their overall status in the AFC East and where they're at right now under Rex Ryan, his first year at head coach, how do you see this team overall?
They're kind of an old school team with a little bit of new age approach, because they have a quarterback that can run by design and improvisationally.
Yeah, I think that it's not as diverse as Carolina.
No.
But certainly
no.
They do a lot of different things, and there's lots of different facets, especially with Carlos Williams coming back into the lineup this week, presumably, that you have to prepare for. Obviously, it starts with LeSean McCoy, and his comeback is going to be the big story this week. Obviously, still a very talented player. And what have you seen from him as you studied the Bills throughout the season?
I think over the last month or so, Fran, he has looked really, really good on film. He is dynamically quick. We know how shifty and elusive he is. And they attack the perimeter in the run game.
Sure, yeah.
And because of Tyrod Taylor, they're able to attack the perimeter in ways that are different from a normal team that just runs a sweep, let's say, or a toss play. Because when Taylor's in the gun, which is the large majority of the time, and then he hands the ball to McCoy on a sweep, the backside has to be very leery that Taylor could keep the ball. So the pursuit, when there's a sweep, the backside pursuit is very hesitant and uncertain. And we've seen plays this year where McCoy has taken the ball on a sweep and he starts turning upfield and there's no backside pursuit.
Yep.
Because of Taylor. So McCoy is critical here. The other thing I think that's concerning about McCoy, as you look to sort of scout the Bills, is he's become a big factor in the pass game, and not just on dump-offs or check-downs, designed plays. I've seen him run wheel routes. He does what we've seen Darren Sproles do, where he gets out of the backfield and he beats a linebacker. in the middle of the defense. So he's a real concern for the Eagles' defense.
Yeah, and this is a we'll talk about the passing game in a bit, but this is a vertical pass team, and you see so many deep shots down the field.
Yes.
And I can remember one touchdown that they threw against the New York Giants where it was double post down in the red zone. I think it was the 28-yard line. It was a high red. And they ran a wheel route behind the double post to Carlos Williams, and Tyrod Taylor dropped it in beautifully for a touchdown. So they like to use those running backs out of the backfield and design pass plays to try and get them open. But I think this will be interesting because you look at this Eagles defense, and I thought, again, they had another strong, pretty strong game against the run. Not, you know, they weren't overly dominant, but a lot of the big runs that they did give up early, the chunk plays to LeGarrette Blount early in this game against New England, they were cutback runs where we kind of lost contain on the back end. This is going to be a team you can't afford to do that with.
Not with LeSean.
Not with LeSean. And then also with Tyrod Taylor as part of the running game as well. You have to be very disciplined in your fits. You have to be very disciplined in your rush lanes as well when you're trying to attack them in the pass game.
Well, and even though their pass game is not really expansive at all by NFL standards, you still have to be concerned about Taylor in three areas. Number one, designed runs.
Yep.
And whether that's read option or quarterback power or quarterback sweep, he'll run the ball by design. And number two, you have to be concerned when he does drop back to pass that he'll scramble. And what's worse for a defense than when it's third and nine, you think you're all set, the quarterback scrambles for 12 yards and gets a first down.
Exactly.
That's a killer. And then the third thing with Taylor and his legs is obviously when he does leave the pocket and scramble, that tends to break down the discipline of coverage, whether it's man or zone. And then he's able to make some throws. And you have to be real careful about that.
So whenever you go and you're going to face a quarterback like this, we've talked about this a year ago when the Eagles were preparing to take on the Seattle Seahawks and Russell Wilson. You have to be very disciplined in how you try and form the pocket.
Yes.
You want to try and keep the quarterback in the pocket. How surprised have you been with how Tyrod Taylor has been able to perform inside the structure of the pocket throughout the course of the season, his first year as a starter?
I think it's been a little up and down, and I think that when you look at a lot of the good games they've had, he hasn't thrown a lot of passes. He hasn't attempted a lot of passes, and I think for the most part they keep the concepts pretty basic. They'll attack down the field with the vertical routes. Those are not progression reads. Obviously, Sammy Watkins over the last 2 weeks has become a dynamic vertical threat. That's a major concern because he can run by Byron Maxwell and Eric Rowe. Now, obviously, that's not going to happen on every play, but he's capable of doing that. I think the other receiver that's concerning is Charles Clay, the tight end, because he can line up in a number of places. He's really kind of a bigger wide receiver type mover. And there have been some nice concepts earlier in the season with him. They've kind of gotten away from that. I think they need to get back to that. But for the most part, this is a fairly simplistic pass game in terms of what they do conceptually.
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, you have almost it's one or two progressions. And then if those one or two progressions aren't there, he's breaking the pocket and trying to create something, you know, with his feet. So very interesting to see how this offense progresses. And you talked about Sammy Watkins. And, you know, obviously playing in the AFC East, I don't get to see the Bills play often on tape. And I knew I loved Sammy Watkins coming out of Clemson, so I knew what kind of talent he was. I was so impressed with how well he performs on those vertical routes because he is so good at right at the snap, getting on top of defenders and stacking them immediately. As soon as he's even, he's stepping in front and putting himself in good position down the field where you have to commit a penalty or you're just going to pray that it's an incomplete pass. He's so good at positioning his body on those vertical routes, on those sluggos, the stutter goes, the go routes, the deep posts. He does such a good job at keeping those defenders at bay.
And he seems to have that knack that, and I've talked with Ron Jaworski about this all the time, about certain receivers. He used to tell me this about Mike Quick all the time, that Mike Quick might not time 4-4, but with the ball in the air, he was 4-4. And Watkins seems to have that knack. There seems to be a little bit of a burst when the ball's in the air. And he just separates as much as is necessary to win against the corner.
And you know, it's funny, too, on the complete opposite end of the coin, there were some throws. I think it was a touchdown catch against the Chiefs where he ran a stutter go.
Yep.
And he had to slow down because the ball was a little bit underthrown. And he throttled down, but it was still able to keep the defender on his backside. So he was able, you know, he makes it so that the ball just falls right into his lap and just does such a great job at tracking the ball down the field. Just a really impressive talent. We know what he can do with the ball in his hands as well after the catch. Very, very interesting to see how the Eagles' defense is going to try and compete with him on the back end in the secondary.
There'll be some double-team concepts because, quite honestly, you have Robert Woods and you have Chris Hogan in the slot, and not to slight those guys, but I think that there'll be some double-team concepts involved depending on personnel, formation, down and distance, field location, all those things that go into determining what you do defensively. But they will double-team Sammy Watkins.
I would think so. We've seen a lot of those different kinds of concepts from the Eagles over the course of the season. And then the other guy we had kind of skipped over in this talk about their offense. Coming back this week, he was out the last week or so with a shoulder injury. Rookie, Carlos Williams. Big physical kid who can get downhill in a hurry. Definitely has the burst that you look for at the running back position. What have you seen from him, and has he surprised you a little bit after watching him at Florida State a year ago?
Probably, I would say yes. Obviously, a totally different back than McCoy.
Yeah.
Williams is a straight line, downhill runner, decisive, not real shifty. I think he's a really good gap scheme runner. You run power with him, and if you can create something at the point of attack, he will hit it. He'll be decisive. He's a 235-pound back, and he's got very good short area burst. So he's a totally different kind of runner.
Yeah, and I think they do a really good job of when he is in the game. They really cater to his skill set.
I agree.
You know, they run a lot of power with him, and you don't see as much power with
LeSean
McCoy.
That's not the kind of runner Shady is.
Exactly. So, I mean, they run a lot of the gap
schemes. He's looking for space.
Some traps, some wet, you know, and then some of the power runs as well. So very good stuff to see from that coaching staff. And he's a load to bring down once he's hitting downhill. So very interested to see how he performs this weekend. Let's flip sides to the defensive side of the football. Rex Ryan, you got to talk about what he is as a defensive football coach and what has he shown so far in
Buffalo. I think for people who just have this mental picture of Rex as sort of this wacky, mad scientist who conjures up all these blitzes, it's not really been like that this year, Fran, and I know you've studied the tape as well. They did blitz more this past week against Houston, but in the prior four or five games before that, this had not been a high-percentage blitz team. Now, Stephon Gilmore is going to be out this week, but they've been really good at the corner position with Darby and Gilmore, and they've played a lot of man on the outside. They felt really comfortable, and we'll see. Leotis McKelvin is likely the starter on the outside, now opposite Darby. He's not Stephon Gilmore. As I said, last week you started to see against the Texans, who actually do play some up-tempo stuff as well, you started to see them dial up some pressures. And I'll be real anxious to see if he does that. And they were really well-timed. I don't know if you saw the game, but they had a really well-timed blitz. Bakari Rambo. Who's starting at basically free safety, was very, very good as a blitzer, and he was used in that way on a number of occasions. Graham, the other safety, number 20, is a player who's played corner in this league as well. He often matches up to the tight end. He'll be on Ertz more than likely when they play man, and I think they'll play a decent amount of man.
Yeah, they usually do, yeah.
So, and they can rush the quarterback, although I think maybe their best lineman, Kyle Williams, is out for the season, and he's a really, really good player.
Yeah, load inside for sure. And then you have Marcel Darius, who lines up next to him, the former top five pick. They've got some pieces, too. I mean, obviously, Mario Williams, the former number one overall pick. But, you know, Jerry Hughes is a dynamic guy and really does a good job at not just obviously getting after the quarterback, but he does such a good job at attacking the throwing arm, forces a ton of fumbles, has a ridiculous first step and the ability to spin off of tackles. He wins inside. He wins outside. Very, very interesting guy. Manny Lawson has been in the league for so long now.
Still a solid linebacker. Yeah. Last week, Nigel Bradham was out, so Lawson essentially took his spot playing inside stack backer.
Yeah, and then they have the rookie, Tony Stewart's playing some snaps, too.
Yeah.
I don't know did you watch him coming out of Clemson?
I did not, because Clemson had about 40 guys on their defense that you had to watch,
sure.
And I didn't get to Tony Stewart.
Yeah, no, so he's seen some quality snaps from him. Preston Brown has seen a lot of snaps. I mean, they're rotating guys in and out there in the front seven. But obviously, we'll see whether or not, and we've talked about this in the past, when you're a pressure-based football team defensively going up against an up-tempo offense, there can be some struggles there.
And the Eagles, teams don't blitz the Eagles a lot, and the reason, I believe, is because of the up-tempo. And that's an advantage the Eagles get because teams are most concerned about lining up. And I'm real anxious to see how Rex Ryan deals with that because Rex has a lot of swagger to him. And you know he's going to think that, hey, I'm not going to let, you know, some college coach beat me with his speed tempo system. I mean, that's the way Rex is going to think.
Right, yeah.
And I guarantee he's going to tell his team that.
Yeah.
And I'll be, you know, just to me, it's such an intriguing part of this game because Rex was always a guy that he wanted to knock, no pun intended, that chip off your shoulder. And, you know, like I said, he hasn't blitzed a ton over the last month or so. Not the way we think of a Rex Ryan defense. This will be a real intriguing game to watch. And when we watch it on Sunday, it's going to be a lot of fun.
As a fan of bad puns, I appreciate the knock the chip off the shoulder comment. Greg Gosselaar, I appreciate the time here as always on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. We'll have you here next week.
All right, Fran, thanks.
Great stuff from Greg. And as most of you know, you can follow him on Twitter at Greg Cosell. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. Give me a follow if you like what you're hearing on this podcast. I tweet out the links to this one, all of the other podcasts I'm a part of, the Eagle Eye and the Sky column, a whole lot more. So be sure to go check that out. You know, I really appreciate everyone that gives us love and promotes the podcast on social media. But before we get to the rest of the show, BT, we haven't made our pick yet for who is going to be getting some free autographed Eagle swag, but what's the activity like right now, iTunes, Stitcher, and everywhere else that we distribute the show?
Podbay. Still getting a lot of good comments, people writing and giving us what they like, what they don't like about the show. And we, like you said, we haven't picked out our comment yet, but we're definitely going to give you some autographed Eagle swag. So send in something good. Anthony Russomano, send in good stuff. Occupy Your Mother. I love hearing from all the different people, especially if you're an Eagles fan, you're not an Eagles fan. We try to tailor the show where you can take something away from it, even if you aren't the biggest Eagles fan. So send us in what you like, and we'll certainly try to get that to you.
Yep, no question about it. Again, it's the number one way to support the podcast. Go on, leave us a rating, leave us a comment, and it'll be you. It could be you that gets some autographed Eagle swag in the mail from us. BT will personally pack the box up and send it to you. He probably won't.
I will personally do it.
You will actually send it in the mail?
I will put it in FedEx. I will have it to you.
Wow. There you go. I mean, that's all the motivation I need.
Even though I wasn't a Boy Scout.
Yeah, there
you go. But I cross my heart, hope to die. Stick a needle in my eye.
All right, there we go. All right, well, B, let's keep the show rolling here. I had a great conversation last week with Eagles running back Kenyon Barner. Let's get that going here on Two Technique.
Time to get inside the mind of a player. It's time for Two Technique.
Joining me this week on Two Technique, Eagles running back Kenyon Barner. And Kenyon, I want to talk to you this week about the screen game and just a basic screen pass. What does the running back have to worry about? What are the first things that go through your mind when you know, okay, this is going to be a screen call? What are the first things that go to your mind as you line up right before the snap?
First thing you got to do is obviously be aware of what the line is calling, who they're working to, what guy you would have if he's going to come on a blitz. Second thing is you have to be a great actor, you know, make it seem believable, make it look believable that you're actually pass blocking. Thirdly, you have to be patient, allow your guys to get out in front of you. Then you have to look the ball in and set your guys up and take it on in from there.
So how does it change if you read pre-snap that it's going to be man or if it's going to be zone coverage? How much does that change what you're looking to do early in the down?
Well, if it's men, it doesn't really affect me. It's more so the line now, because now they have to know that backer is going to be peeling with me as I peel out around for the screen. So now they have to be aware if he is. So if it's zone, it's the same thing. It affects the line more so than me. You know, obviously you have to get a read on it to know whether or not you're going to have room to turn and go now, or you kind of have to be patient and set the guys up.
One thing we've talked about with Chip Kelly in the past is he'll tell his running backs, FTF, forget the fake, if there's a blitzer coming. How does that impact you in the screen game? If you see that there's a free rusher coming at the quarterback, do you have to try and impact him before you release out into the pattern?
Yeah, depending on where he's coming from. If he's coming from depth, then a lot of times you can kind of bluff him and go. If he's coming from the edge, kind of the same thing. If he's up on the line of scrimmage, then you have to go. You have to get a piece of him, then get out into the screen. Because if you don't get a piece of him, the screen will never work. The quarterback will never have time. So you definitely want to get a piece of him if he's on the line of scrimmage. But if he's coming from depth, you don't have to do too much with him. Just got to be a good actor.
All right, so last question. As a running back and someone who likes to be in space, especially you're a returner, what is the dilemma in your mind once you get the football and you know, okay, the offensive line's got to get out in front, but if you've seen green grass, do you almost just want to hit it as soon as possible, or do you know, okay, I got to be patient and let these guys get out in front a little bit?
9 times out of 10, if I see green grass, I want to go. And if there's nobody there, absolutely free, it's clear, I'm not waiting. I'm going to go, because at the end of the day, I don't think nobody's going to catch me.
Great stuff there from Kenyon. He did a great job breaking down the art of the screen pass for you. So I'm going to quickly break down how to subscribe to a podcast. If you're listening to this on the Eagles app on the website and you really like what you hear, it's really simple. You just go to your phone, you go to your tablet, you go to your laptop, go to find your iTunes, wherever you think that you would need to subscribe to a podcast. And all you have to do is search for Eagle Eye in the Sky, hit subscribe, and the show goes to your phone, goes to your device each and every week. You don't have to do anything, and then you can listen whenever and wherever you want. Podcast is a beautiful thing, and really it's the wave of the future. I mean, it's the way that every stat I see shows that more and more people are listening to podcasts. So really, if you don't want to get behind the eight ball, this is what you got
to
do.
So my aunt wants to subscribe to the podcast. She's 75 years old, loves Eagles and all the work we do. So she's like, I want to subscribe to podcasts. And I said, you know what? I'm going to turn on Eagle Eye. I'm going to give her the instructions and see if she can go for it. So that's going to be my fail test to see if my aunt can kind of get with the wave of podcasting.
Well, for BT's aunt, all you have to do, again, you just go to your device and hit subscribe. And look, it's not just this podcast. You can go and you can find the Eagles Insider podcast, the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA, which is about to be kicked into high gear as we're getting ready to discuss here in Saturday Scouting. And then as well, if you want to hear more about the NFL draft, the College Draft podcast with myself and Ross Tucker. There's a ton of great podcasts out there. You just have to know where to look. You can go and you can listen whenever you want. So really great stuff. Let's get into the rest of the show here with Saturday Scouting.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
All right, no guests this week on Saturday Scouting. And I'm going to be honest, I don't know that there will be many more guests for Saturday Scouting. We're kind of shifting around what some of those interviews are going to be and what that segment will be in the future. But for this week, what we're going to do, we had a lot more announcements come through from the Senior Bowl and from the Shrine Game over the past couple of days. So we have some new names to kind of go over as we prepare for our trip down to Mobile. We'll talk a little bit more about that later. But BT, I know you had a few names that you wanted to ask me about with the new announcements from Mobile.
Yep, and there's some guys we actually talked about earlier in the season when you gave us some matchups to look at as the college football season was going along. So I'm going to throw a couple guys at you. Give me your thoughts on what you think. These are guys that have all accepted their invites to the Senior Bowl. So they're guys that we're going to see when we go down there.
And a little peek behind the curtain. I have no idea who BT – I gave him the list of who got announced, and I have no idea who he's going to ask me about.
So I usually come up with, when I'm down there, about 5, maybe 10 guys that I'm going to just try to watch throughout the week.
Of your guys.
Off the field, on the field, just see
– Sure.
And try to track them going forth. So – first guy I'm definitely going to be taking a look at when I'm down there is Jacoby Brissett, from quarterback from North Carolina State.
Yep, so it's interesting. He was announced for the Shrine Game last week, and this has happened with a few different guys. And I was really interested in the fact that he got accepted to the Shrine Game. I figured that he would be a Senior Bowl quarterback. I figured out, okay, maybe they're just waiting for a couple spots before they send him the invite. He did get the invite to Mobile, and he is going down. But we've talked about Brissett in the past, a big, strong kid. He's got a good arm. Flashes the ability to be very, very accurate, flashes the ability to be able to work in a muddy pocket with bodies around him. And he does such a good job at times of doing that. But then there are other times where he doesn't. And that's the thing, is that you wanted to see that consistency. I've watched like 5 or 6 games over the last couple of years of Brissett. And again, there are times where I watch him and I think, wow, this kid has a chance to be a really good player. But then there are other times where I'm left wanting a little bit more, even against some of the lesser competition, like the Old Dominions of the world that he's faced in the past. So I want to continue to watch more, and I will watch a couple more games before we go down to the Senior Bowl. But he's got NFL tools for sure. The arm, the accuracy, the athleticism, the play strength. I mean, he's got a lot of different traits that you can hang your hat on.
So it's just his consistency at this point.
To me, in my eyes, that's for me. And again, that's the funny thing with consistency is – I may see that the guy's inconsistent just because based on what I've seen, but if somebody else watched,
it's all relative.
Exactly right. So with me, that's the thing, is I just want to see more to see, is he more consistently good or more consistently bad?
And what I like when I go down there and for these weeks is that you're seeing these guys more or less against decent competition. They're
sure.
Not going against the Old Dominions. They're going against, it's basically an all-star team. So you're seeing these guys going up against guys who are hungry, want to obviously build their stock in the draft. So
yep. And then the other thing too with the quarterbacks is, it's such a big week for them, just getting in front of the decision makers, getting in front of the coaches, show how they handle themselves. You remember when we saw Derek Carr down there a couple years ago, what was he doing after practice? Instead of talking to the media, instead of talking to us, he was off to the side throwing with receivers, walking on routes on air with receivers. So it's just a big week for those guys and just showing off what they can be away from the football field for decision makers.
So a guy I watched the last couple of weeks, and he's definitely shined on the TV broadcast, Adolphus Washington, the defensive tackle out of Ohio State, number 92, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the guy has played well in the last couple of games.
Big kid inside. For his size, he's pretty athletic. He's got light feet, uses his hands really well, just a natural two-gapping. To me, he's a nose tackle. I think he's got the ability to play a number of different spots along a defensive line, but to me, he is a nose tackle through and through, whether it's two-gap scheme or a one-gap scheme. Again, has lighter feet than you'd expect, but a big kid who knows how to use his hands.
Going to go down to the SEC here. Linebacker Antonio Morrison. Tell me about him.
All right,
what do you know about him?
So Morrison, a bit undersized, and that'll be a question for him, and that has been an issue for him throughout his career down in Florida. But a guy that has faced adversity throughout his career. He faced some injuries, faced some suspensions. But he's got pretty good athleticism, and he shows the ability to come downhill and be very, very aggressive. He's not afraid to back down from an offensive lineman or a tight end or a fullback in the hole at the point of attack. The problem with him is going to be, does he have enough athleticism to overcome his lack of size? And does he show the ability to use his hands to keep himself free at the point of attack? Because there are a lot of times where he can get engulfed by some of those linemen and some of those bigger tight ends. If he has trouble with length at this level, how will he be able to do that at the NFL level? So that'll be the big question for him moving forward.
A homer here, guy you've watched, Tavon Young. I heard a lot about him in the was it SMU?
Yep.
He went down to SMU, and he's been hurt towards the end of the
year. He had the ankle. So he came out of the conference title game in the first year.
And I watched a little bit of that game before we obviously took off.
Yep.
But tell me a little bit about Tavon.
So Tavon, he's interesting because he's not a really big kid. He's not a small corner, but he's not a really big kid either. So I would say he's probably got average
smaller
size.
Stature.
But athletically, I mean, he's very smooth. He's got really quick feet, shows good change of direction, shows the ability to hip pocket with receivers. I thought he showed pretty natural ball skills in some of the games that I watched. I want to continue to watch more. And with defensive backs, I always want to watch as much as possible just because you don't see, it's more so with the safety position than the corner position, but you want to be able to see as many reps of him as possible, especially when it comes to playing the ball in the air. You get to see, are his ball skills as natural as they seem to be when you first see it, and you want to see as big a sample size as possible. But Tavon Young shows a lot of promise. I'm excited to see him and the other two Temple Owls that will be down there.
A guy he might cover in the future. Converted wide receiver Braxton Miller. I loved him early in the season, but what was he like as you got a full year of tape in terms of watching him?
So I watched the games I studied. I studied the week one game against Virginia Tech for sure.
He had a great spin move. It was right. Kind of your SportsCenter-esque highlight.
And that was and we knew what he was after the
athletically,
catch. Athletically, and you kind of knew with the ball in his hands, the kid's a playmaker. What I was really impressed with was I thought that he was much further along as a route runner.
That was
week one. He was much further along as a route runner than I expected. Wasn't great, but showed the ability to be very, very good. So I want to be able to see now what is he like after, 5 months, 6 months of being at the position. Where is he at from that? I know that he gets coached really, really hard. Zach Smith is the receivers coach there. I was actually with him at Temple for a short amount of time. So I know he gets coached hard, and he works along a lot of little things in terms of blocking and special teams and things of that nature. They coach those wide receivers hard at Ohio State. So very excited to kind of see what Braxton Miller looks like when we get down to Mobile. The times that I have watched him and really kind of focused in on him this fall, I've come away very, very impressed. He's made some nice catches as well, diving catches, plucking the ball away from his frame, not letting balls into his body. I mean, he's really come along, I think, at the wide receiver position. So excited to see where he's at in January.
Tell me about Nick Martin, from offensive lineman from Notre Dame.
So he's a guy. He's the one guy on this list that I haven't really studied yet. But here's what I'll tell you: Tony Pauline thinks he's got first that teams have first round grades on him. And Mike Mayock, I talked to a few weeks back, and Mayock absolutely loves him. Thinks he's a first round center. And has everything that you want as an interior offensive lineman. So a guy that I'm really, really excited to study moving forward. He's had a lot of opportunities to go up against bigger offensive linemen or bigger defensive linemen. He's going to get another chance to do it in the bowl game against Adolphus Washington from Ohio State. So a lot of really big matchups that I'm really excited to dig into for Zach Martin or for Nick Martin, the younger brother of Zach Martin. So
I'm just looking at him like, is he the younger brother of Zach Martin?
Yeah. So it's Zach Martin's younger brother. Brings a lot to the table. And the guy, again, I talked to Tony Pauline. everyone he talks to in the NFL community says
no doubt about it.
Yeah, that he's a big time in terms of a center prospect, a big time center prospect, and Mayock absolutely adored him.
And Notre Dame's had a lot of success putting out offensive linemen, obviously Zach Martin and Travis Frederick from
yeah, and then they have Ronnie Stanley this year. Yeah, and they have Ronnie Stanley this year, who a lot of people think is going to be a top half of the first round type of guy. So very good group overall.
And then last one I have for you here. I feel like I'm an honorary LSU fan. Tell me about Jalen Mills, defensive back.
So Jalen Mills was a guy that coming into the year I thought was the best safety in the senior class. And it's not a great group of senior safeties overall, but I thought that he was the best of the group that I had watched over the summer coming into the year. He broke his leg in August, so he missed the first 2 or 3 months of the season. Came back. I haven't studied him yet since he's returned, but a guy that is a former corner, played at nickel, played on the outside. They moved him back to safety, and he shows corner cover skills. He shows good range, very natural ball skills, and he's not afraid to come up and play against the run either. So whenever you've got a guy that can do, it's almost like the baseball players that coming up through the ranks, a five-tool player.
Five-tool guy.
He's a five-tool type of safety, one of those guys that can just do everything you ask on the back end.
So not putting you on the spot here, but Eric Rowe's obviously a guy that's going from safety to corner, kind of versatile guy. Is he of that ilk, or is he a little different?
I think he's a little bit. I think to me, Mills is more safety. I thought Rowe showed corner skills, and he's shown that in the NFL so far, too, through two games. One game as a starter, and then the other seeing most of the action against Detroit. I think that he's shown corner skills. I want to see from Mills in person if he's got those corner skills. Everything that I've watched of him, where I've studied, has been as a safety, so it's kind of tough to gauge sometimes. I'll tell you another guy that got announced today, too. The Houston Carson kid from William & Mary, DeAndre Houston Carson. I want to say he's 6'1", 205 pounds, former corner that got moved to safety this year as a senior, and he's really impressive, man. I mean, it's funny.
More at safety?
He played at safety this year.
He's more impressive at safety than corner.
Really, really impressive. And when I watched him, he's got a very, very similar frame to a former first-round pick, Clinton Dix from Alabama. Just the way that he runs and the way, the lanky frame just reminded me of him. But aggressive downhill, shows the corner cover skills as well. So it'll be an interesting group, I think, overall in this safety class. And it's not the name. A few months ago, we talked about guys like Carl Joseph and Jeremy Cash, and those guys are still getting talked about. I would take those two guys, Mills and DeAndre Houston Carson, over those two any day.
Well, there's a lot of good names coming in. Can't wait to get down there to watch some more. And
It's soon, because guess what I did last week?
You booked this.
I booked our trip to. I booked for Senior Bowl and for Shrine Game because look, hopefully we're not going down. Hopefully we're getting ready for a Super Bowl at that point.
Championship weekend,
but. We've got to, we can't just buy tickets in the third week of January.
Season's over. Let's just buy tickets.
Yeah, you have to prepare for that stuff in advance. So I went and I booked all that stuff last week. So we'll be going to Felix's for some nice seafood. We'll see all the Nutria rats.
Can't wait.
See all the familiar faces of Mobile, Alabama.
Now, are we doing the long drive again?
We are doing the long drive.
Okay, so
We're flying into Pensacola.
So we'll cross that border at Florida, Alabama.
So we'll stop for that barbecue.
That barbecue. Bo, that's a shout out to you.
Exactly right. So lots to get to here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. I would say, during those 2 weeks when we're away, I probably won't have this podcast during that time, probably. But we've got a few weeks before that, so we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. All that being said, I think that'll do it for this week's show. Another episode of the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For my man BT, I'm Fran Duffy. We'll see you next week.